This is Bart Cowan, tape 3.
When I got on the airplane in August 1958 to go to the Air Force, I was stationed at a base called Geiger Field in Spokane, Washington, which was the heart of the airport in Spokane. At that time, Spokane had 4 Air Force bases. Of course, I had never been to Spokane, Washington. I hardly knew where it was. I got an airplane in Cleveland. It was a prop plane, four jets. It was a prop for commercial jets. And flew to Geiger Field and reported there to the base. Spent my whole 3 years in the Air Force at Geiger Field. It was a good experience. It was not very intellectually challenging. I tried about 150 court-martial cases when I was in the Air Force for 3 years, probably half of them prosecuting and half defending. I was an investigations officer, did contract work. I had two bosses when I was in the Air Force. One was a major, and the other one was a captain. My first boss was one of the most unforgettable characters I've ever met. His name was from Laredo, Texas, and his name was Bismarck Pope Jr. And Major Pope had a son, Bismarck Pope III. And I'll never forget the first day on the job. I reported to the base, and I had not yet processed through. And Major Pope had me in his office, and he said, "We have hours this afternoon," which meant that people came in and consulted with you on legal problems, office hours, legal aid type of thing. And he said, "Why don't you participate in that, and then we'll process you afterwards." I didn't know any better, so I said, "That sounds very good, Major." And he assigned me a desk, and the hours were 2 hours, from 2 to 4, or 1 to 3, whatever it was. And the first person comes in and sits down, and it's some 19-year-old airman, and he proceeds to tell me a story about how he had been taken in by a book salesman, a door-to-door book salesman, selling encyclopedias, and he wanted to know how he could get out of the contract because he really didn't want that. This was before the days when you had 72 hours to negate the contract. And I got all the facts down, and I said to him, I'll have to get back to you on this because some of the facts you told me are a little different than the usual case I hear. I hadn't heard any cases in my entire life when this guy came in. And he said, "Yes, Lieutenant." And he said, "When would you like me to come back?" And I said, "Our next hours are," and I had a listing there. And I told him, and he said, "Yes, sir." And he stood up and he snapped off a salute, and I wasn't used to that at all. Mm-hmm. And he left. And then some airman came in with his wife, and they were having a problem relating to their rent payment. Again, I told them that the facts were a little bit different than what I usually hear, and can they come back in 2 days? And yes, sir, and he snapped up to attention. And then I went over to a captain, who was one of the judge advocate officers who I just met, and I said, "I'd like to review these two cases because, frankly, I don't know what to tell these guys." I had no more, law school had clearly not prepared me for landlord-tenant problems and for book salesman overselling 19-year-olds. And this captain, who had been in the Air Force for some 18 years or so, chuckled, and he said, "Tell me what the facts are." I told him, he says, "Here's what you should tell them." And they came back, and that's exactly what I told them. So law school did not teach me how to handle those problems. That was the first day on the job. First day as a lawyer, I wasn't admitted to the bar yet. I had taken the bar, but wasn't admitted yet. And as I say, Major Pope was our staff judge advocate at the time. We had court-martial jurisdiction over all of the radar stations in the Pacific Northwest and in the, up in Canada, which meant that we had to do a lot of traveling. I did a lot of traveling to those various stations, places like Yak, Montana. This newspaper, base newspaper, station newspaper, was the New Yak Times. And Yak was about, at that time, about 20-something miles by dirt road from the nearest paved road. And places like Cottonwood, Idaho, Colville, Washington, all these out-of-the-way way places. We had some pretty fascinating cases. We broke up pornography rings and sex rings. And, we had some one case that had an international incident when a lieutenant or a captain stationed at one of our radar stations in Canada got on the free lines and call to various women operators at the Canadian and the United States Air Force headquarters and used lewd and abusive language on the phone. I was investigating officer on that. But there were all kinds of interesting cases. Major Pope was eventually transferred to the Air Force base at Albuquerque, New Mexico. And we had a secretary there who was Major Pope. Had to be 40 years old, and he had a very, maybe 35 years old, he had a very nice, very mousy type of wife, and a son, Bismarck Pope III, who was absolutely, talking about 8 years old, was absolutely intimidated by his father. And we had this secretary at the base, we had two secretaries in the JAG, but we had the one secretary who was very good looking and very sexy and didn't mind flaunting what she had. And when he got transferred, we were told a couple days after the notice of transfer that she was leaving her job. We didn't think of anything. There were still three of us. Three lawyers there, and we had another secretary, and we were going to get another one. And he came by to say goodbye in his station wagon. And his wife and child and dog or cat were in the back seat. And he was sitting in the front seat, and the secretary was sitting in the front seat. And we went out. He came in, and we all went out to say goodbye to him as he was driving, going to drive off. And the senior-ranking person among us, the captain, said, "Major, where is?" I forget the secretary's name. Going, and says, "Oh, haven't you heard? She's transferring right along with us." I will never remember the look on everybody's face when that happened. My second CO was also equally a character in a different way. His name was Bricates. He was from a family of lawyers in Maine.
I'm sorry,
Bricates, B-R-I-C-K-A-T-E-S. He was from a family of lawyers in Saco, Maine. And he had been in the Navy. And, of course, in the Navy, a captain is a very high-ranking officer. It's like a colonel of the Air Force. And he transferred to the Air Force and was given a captain's commission, which is the same level of Navy. and he couldn't get over the idea that he was now a captain. Major Bricates was single, he was a bachelor, and was a pretty good CO too. But the difference was, in legal terms, was Major Pope was a very weak lawyer. He was very good on the politics of the base, but very weak as a lawyer. He happened to have, in addition to me, a lieutenant named Jim Coffey, who was a graduate of the University of Texas Law School, a very, very capable lawyer, now general counsel of Atlantic Richfield. And another lawyer named Harry Hins, who's now retired, that was the career captain, who was also a very good lawyer. And Major Pope knew his limitations as a lawyer. And so he relied 100% on his lawyers for the law. So if you told him, or any of us told him, that the law was such and such a way, he would then carry the ball politically to make sure that it was carried through. Major Bricates, or Captain Bricates, was, I think, a better lawyer than Major Pope. But Captain Bricates featured himself as a better lawyer than he really was. And so sometimes he would get into a little bit of trouble because he would take a somewhat different position than what the law was and then get caught up in it. That happened a couple of times. After the first couple of times, he also learned to rely on his other lawyers. But intellectually, it was not too stimulating. Therefore, one of the first things I did in Spokane was I went to Gonzaga Law School. Gonzaga is a university in Spokane, the most famous alumnus of Bing Crosby. And Gonzaga Law School was the law school there, and I taught in their law school. That provided a lot of stimulation.
I'm sorry, what law school was it?
Gonzaga, G-O-N-Z-A-G-A.
Did you learn a lot of practicality, though, with some of the, you know,
I learned three, there were three aspects of military, being in the military, that were very good. One, I learned the rules of evidence, backwards and forwards, because in the courts, that's what you were doing. I was presenting court-martial cases or defending. So I learned the rules of evidence very well. Second, I learned a lot about contract law, because we were the contract lawyers for the base. And so I learned a lot about contract law. And then I got a good smattering of practical, what I'll call family law. It's really not family law, practical law. The encyclopedia example I gave you before was not the last encyclopedia example, and the landlord-tenant dispute was not the last landlord-tenant dispute. We had some remarkably funny cases there. I'll tell you one story if I have time. We had a airman who was married, who got married to a 16-year-old girl. This airman was from Kentucky. He got married to a 16-year-old girl. And they stopped the payments of his family allowance to his first wife, who was on the records as being his wife back in Kentucky. He went to stop her. And his boss decided that this airman was no good and he was going to get him on something. And so he, against our advice, he brought him up on a bigamy charge. Because his first wife had written in when the payment stopped and said she was still married while the payment stopped, and he had put in for second wife's to get the payments. And so the commander of this squadron said, I'm going to bring him up on a bigamy charge. I was prosecuting the case. Of course, you have to get testimony from the person, from the wife, in order to be a witness. So I agreed with the defense counsel that we would take a telephone interview and have it transcribed. That would serve, and we waived her presence. I would do the direct examination. He would do the cross, and so forth. So I got on the phone, and I identified myself, and I identified Captain Hins on the other line, told her what the case is about, talking to this woman from Kentucky with a very Kentucky accent. And I said, are you married to Sergeant so-and-so? And she said, yes, I am. And when did you get married? And she gives a date. And where did you get married? And she gives a date, a place. And by whom were you married? And she told who officiated. And have you ever been divorced since you were married? No, I haven't. And have you been receiving these payments? Yes, I have. And I have the whole thing established. I said, now I'm going to have Captain Hins get on, and he's going to ask you some questions, as is his right to do it. So he introduces himself, and he goes back over my questions, basically, answering very comfortably. He said, were you ever married before you married Sergeant so-and-so? And there's a pause, and she said, yes, I was. And he said, and where was that? She told him, and when was that? She told him, and he said, and were you ever divorced from your first, this prior husband? There's a long pause on the phone, and she said, let me speak with that other nice man. It turned out that she was not divorced from her first husband. Therefore, her marriage to the sergeant was a nullity. Therefore, he is not legally married to her. Therefore, his marriage to the 16-year-old is a valid marriage. And we dismissed the case. I don't think I've ever been more shocked in my whole life to hear that. I could bore you with a lot of stories like that. We had a lot of characters.
You learned a different life than you
learned
a
totally
were used
different
to.
Life. I mean, a different lifestyle. It was very, very interesting experience.
May I ask a question? While you were in the Air Force, did you experience any anti-Semitism then in the Air Force?
No, I experienced no anti-Semitism, of course, at all.
Were there any other Jews out there?
At our base, there was one Jewish officer. He was an engineering officer named Ruskin, same name as Stanley Ruskin, who was from Chicago. He was married, but he was my age. He was married. And I used to go with him and with his wife quite a bit. There was one Jewish officer at Colville Air Force Station, which was about 90 miles north of us. Air Force Station is a radar station at the top of the mountain with about six officers and about 120 men looking for Russian airplanes. And his name was Robert Murray Shapiro. He was from Springfield, Massachusetts, from the Shapiro's that own the Sweetheart Paper Products. He went back there, in business back there. And Bob and I became very good friends because we were both bachelors. It was not unusual for us to call one another in an afternoon and say, why don't I meet you in such and such a place? And one of us would drive 40 miles and one would drive 50 miles and meet for dinner. Those were the only two Jewish officers that I knew.
Did you observe the holidays when you were in there?
Yes, there were at the time a Reform and a Conservative congregation in Spokane. The Reform congregation's rabbi was from Cleveland. He was a young rabbi. My dad had tutored him in chemistry. I knew him from Cleveland, although he was 3 years older than I was. When I got to Spokane, of course I got there in August, and in September I went to services for the high holidays. He knew I was coming, or when I got there I called him. And he asked me to teach Sunday school. That's how I wrote my wife. He asked me to teach Sunday school and which I did all the time. I went to Spokane. There were about 600 Jews in Spokane at the time.
Did you meet your wife in Spokane or in Seattle?
No, I met my wife in Seattle. I taught, I think it was sixth or seventh graders in Sunday school. I taught a course, one of the courses I taught was Reformed Jewish History. And I had a girl in my class whose oldest sister was married to my wife's brother. So this is my wife's brother's sister. And I was invited to her house for one of the holidays in the fall because she had a middle son, also an older sister, not the oldest, who's not married, who was a junior in college, and her parents were hoping to meet me. So I was invited to their house for dinner, and my wife's brother and sister-in-law were there, and they said, if you're ever over in Seattle, we have somebody we want to fix you up with. It wasn't my wife, it was her cousin. And I said, well, I don't get to Seattle very often, but I'll keep that in mind. I didn't keep it in mind. Later that year, about April, the same year, I announced to the class that I would not be there the following Sunday because I had to go to Portland, Oregon on a case. We had a major pornography case over in Portland. And I was being called in to prosecute because the people on the base were not conflicted out. And I got home from Sunday school that day and I got a call from this girl's mother and she said, I understand you're going to Portland, Oregon. I said, yes. She says, well, one of my daughters lives there. Would you mind if I had a ride? And in those days, you didn't hop on jet planes. So I said, no, that's fine. It's about a five-hour ride. So I said, that's fine. I'd welcome the company. I said, but you need to know that I'm leaving on Wednesday, and I'm probably not going to be coming back on Friday. I probably have to stay over the weekend. And she said, that's fine. So we drove down to Portland. And on Friday afternoon, I called her at the number, and I said, I'm not going to be able to come back because the case isn't over yet. She said, how would you like to come up to Seattle for the weekend? That's where Terry's brother is. And I said, that's fine. I've never spent any time in Seattle. She said, come up and I'll fix you up. So I drove up with her to Seattle. And they were going to fix me up with Terry's cousin.
Uh-huh.
And her cousin was busy. And so they fixed me up with Terry. And that's how I met my wife.
It's incredible.
I stayed at the base. I came home after that week. I went back down to Portland. We finished up the case on Tuesday, and I came home, and I walked into the office on Wednesday, and I had a master sergeant named Smith in our group. And I walked in. I was there about 5 minutes, and Sergeant Smith says, Lieutenant Fallon must have met a girl.
Yeah, he could tell. There was a difference.
And I said, how'd you know? And he said, you're floating.
So you, it was right away.
Yeah, right away.
Was it the same this fast
same
for Terry?
Yes. I knew when I met her, first date. I mean, I went out with her on a Friday night, asked her out for the next night, or Saturday night. Saw her on Sunday before we went back to Portland. She knew also. So it was just one of those.
And then how often were you able to?
Well, we got married. This would have been in May or June of 1960. And we got married in June of 1961. And I guess I went back and forth in that year's time probably 30 times. Now,
how far was it from Spokane to Seattle?
290 miles. The Navy had a station in Spokane, and the Navy had a base in Seattle. They had a lot of bases there. And their reserves from Spokane used to fly over to Seattle every weekend on either Friday night or Saturday morning, and fly back on Sunday late afternoon. And so I could get on that free flight anytime I wanted. If there was space, there was always space. And so I used to go back and forth on that Navy flight. I probably went round trip on that flight 20, 25 times. They did the training every weekend. So when you're in the military, there are all kinds of advantages you get. So I met Terry through the temple. Teaching.
Mm-hmm. And then you also got to know the Seattle life, or the Seattle Jewish life?
Not very much. Oh. I would spend weekends with Terry, but I got to know people, you know, her family and, and some friends, but not a great deal in Seattle. Seattle was a small town compared to what it is today. Today, I guess, it's bigger than Pittsburgh by far. In those days, Seattle did not have 10,000 Jews. Today, I would guess their Jewish population has to be 60,000 to 70,000. Very big. And so it was, and Seattle was a one industry town. Boeing was the industry. It's not a big city. It was a big city, but it wasn't anything close.
Well, at this happy meeting, I think we will end today's session. Okay. This is the third session with Mr. Barton Cowan. This is March 10th, 1998. Marcy Swartz and Judy Rubenstein are interviewing for the National Council of Jewish Women. Bart,
Let me interrupt for a second.
Sure.
You just brought it home when you said it's March 10th. My dad, Oliver Shalom, had he been living, would have been 95 years old today. Go ahead.
It's a special day. The last time we met, you were relating some of your experiences when you were in the service in Seattle and when you met your wife. So perhaps you want to tell us just a little bit more about her family?
Yes, I was stationed in Spokane, Washington, which is about 300 miles from Seattle. I think I relayed last time how I came to meet my wife. Terry is from, Terry's maiden name was Thomas, which caused some interesting incidents when we came back to Pittsburgh, since Thomas isn't generally recognized as a Jewish name in Pittsburgh. But Terry was from a family that dated back to the beginnings of the Jewish community in Seattle. Her grandfather was in the manufacturing business. He manufactured logging trailers and other types of horse-drawn, initially, trailers, ultimately, of course, motor vehicle-type trailers, under the name Peter Thomas Company. He was a founding member, one of the founders of the first conservative congregation in Seattle. The congregation, when it was founded, was Herzl. Now it's Herzl near Tamid. It's the congregation that Terry and I were married in 1961. Her father was very active at the congregation, especially in connection with their burial association and other things revolving around their Jewish cemetery that the congregation has. When I used to go to Seattle, occasionally we would go to services there. And of course, I went over for some of the Jewish holidays. In the first year, in the year between the time I met Terry and the time we were married, I guess I must have been in Seattle 30 or 35 times that year. It wasn't as difficult as it may sound because there was a Navy base in Seattle, and our people in Spokane used to fly over every Friday to the Navy base and fly back on Sunday, and I used to hop a ride with them, went round trip for the weekend, stayed actually at the Naval Station, at Sand Point Naval Station in Seattle, most of those weekends.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, the name of this synagogue
again? Herzl. I had a friend when I was in the service named Robert Shapiro. Bob, who was from Springfield, Massachusetts, was also an officer at our base. He was in the family that owned the paper straws and Dixie cup